The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. I actually started into today's show already on a piece from the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute, which is now being pushed back to tomorrow. I'm like halfway through the recording because Bitcoin Magazine just dropped. Aaron Van Vierdem wrote an article for the Bitcoin Core 0.2, the 0.2 release, and what is new in the new Bitcoin Core client. And there's a lot of really exciting things that I think would go under the radar. So I really want to talk about this and kind of what this means going forward for cleaning up the code base, continuing to harden the underlying, the core of this new financial system and money that we are working with, and, just to stay up to date on what's happening in the reference client. Again, this is from Bitcoin Magazine, and it's written by Aaron Van Vierdem, and it's titled Bitcoin Core 0.2 Released. What's new? Today marks the official release of Bitcoin Core 0.2, the 20th major release of Bitcoin's original software client launched by Satoshi Nakamoto over 11 years ago. Overseen by Bitcoin Core lead maintainer Vladimir von der Laan, this latest major release was developed by over 100 contributors in a span of about 6 months. The result of more than 500 merged pull requests, Bitcoin Core 0.20.0 mostly cleans up and hardens the Bitcoin Core codebase, advances hardware wallet integration, improves network reliability, and includes several other improvements. Here are some of the more notable changes. Further hardware wallet integration in the GUI, or graphical user interface. Bitcoin Core has been compatible with hardware wallets since version 0.18. However, users cannot yet make transactions with a hardware wallet from Bitcoin Core's graphical user interface. They must instead use the command line interface, or CLI, to do that. Bitcoin Core 0.2 is taking a step toward hardware wallet integration into the GUI. Users can now create a transaction without a signature in the Bitcoin Core GUI using the partially signed Bitcoin transaction, PSBT format, and copy it to their clipboard. Once copied, they can transfer the transaction to their hardware wallet to sign it. However, this transfer is not yet automated, and broadcasting the transaction still requires using the CLI. Future Bitcoin Core releases will continue to advance hardware wallet integration. ASMAP for more reliable network connectivity. Bitcoin Core connects to several peers, other Bitcoin nodes, on the Bitcoin network. Bitcoin Core maps other nodes based on their IP addresses with the intent to establish connections with peers from various regions and internet service providers, or ISPs. If a node receives blocks and transactions from peers located all around the world, it decreases the risk that certain data, like a specific transaction, is withheld. Bitcoin Core currently maps IP addresses by network operators groups. However, several of these groups are actually part of the same autonomous system, or AS. Clusters of network operator groups that share key internet routes, and therefore potentially share the same routing bottlenecks where data could potentially be filtered. Bitcoin Core 0.2 includes a new configuration option called ASMAP, which maps IP addresses by automated system numbers, or ASNs. This ensures that the node connects with peers from a range of different ASs, reducing potential network bottlenecks, thus further limiting the risk that specific data is withheld. Mapping IP addresses into network operators groups remains the default configuration for now, however. Removal of BIP61 reject messages. Reject messages, BIP61, are notifications that a node returns when a transaction it received from a peer is rejected, and why? Perhaps because the transaction is invalid, perhaps because it is considered not to include sufficient fee, perhaps there is another reason for the rejection. Bitcoin Core developers do not consider the reject messages very useful, however. Most importantly, peers shouldn't be assumed to reliably return a reject message. In other words, if a node doesn't receive a reject message, it doesn't necessarily mean the transaction was accepted. This limits the usefulness of the messages, while there are better solutions to check that a transaction is valid and includes enough fees. Meanwhile, the messages were making the peer-to-peer protocol more complex, and were taking up bandwidth. BIP61 reject messages had therefore already been disabled by default in Bitcoin Core 0.18. Bitcoin 0.2 has now removed the feature completely. Removal of the BIP70 payment protocol and OpenSSL. The payment protocol, BIP70, was designed several years ago to improve Bitcoin's payment experience. A user and a merchant could communicate additional details about a payment, such as a human-readable destination address, the name of the merchant, and a refund address in case something went wrong with the purchase. While Bitcoin Core integrated the payment protocol, the standard was never widely adopted. Instead, most wallets still used the more basic URI scheme, BIP21, the clickable link or scannable QR code format that, for example, communicates the payment address and amount. Perhaps more importantly than the lack of adoption, the BIP70 payment protocol suffered a number of security and privacy vulnerabilities over the years. Most notably, its dependency on the OpenSSL software library for cryptographic functions required a series of short-notice emergency upgrades. Some Bitcoin wallets have, for these reasons, rejected implementing BIP70 altogether. Bitcoin Core 0.19 removed the payment protocol from the GUI, but users could still compile their node with a special configuration to make use of the feature. Bitcoin Core 0.2 has now completely removed the payment protocol. With BIP70 gone, and some other software tweaks to remove the dependency, Bitcoin Core has also been able to completely remove OpenSSL from its codebase. Dump TX outset as a first step toward assume UTXO for fast bootstrapping. A new remote procedure call, or RPC, lets Bitcoin Core 0.2 generate a snapshot of the UTXO set, which reflects the state of Bitcoin ownership as recorded on the blockchain at a specific point in time, a block height. This snapshot can be shared. Future Bitcoin Core releases will share such a snapshot when peers first join the network. This allows the new nodes to immediately start participating on the network from the point in time when the snapshot was made, while the entire history of the blockchain is checked in the background. Like Assume Valid, a similar shortcut, Assume UTXO, does come with trust trade-offs before the entire blockchain is checked, and should, until then, be used with these trade-offs in mind. For a more extensive list of upgrades, also see the Bitcoin Core 0.2 release notes. All right, and that will conclude Aaron Van Vierdum's breakdown of Bitcoin Core Client 0.2. And I want to dig into what some of these things mean. And again, the philosophy and the mindset of this development process. And also the shift from things that we thought in the past to things that we now understand. This is actually, there's actually a lot of little interesting tidbits and thoughts to pull from this. So we're going to hit our sponsor real quick and then jump back in, and I'll give my take on a lot of what's going on in this new release. All right. So a lot of cool stuff in this new update for Bitcoin Core 0.2. The most exciting thing, really, which I have not yet updated and gotten to play with it, so I, you know, can't give any personal experience yet, but I will definitely be doing that ASAP, but I'm super limited on time, so I wanted to go ahead and get through this, and I'll tinker with it later. But the hardware wallet support. And obviously, most specifically in the graphical user interface. This is something that has been that I think is super critical to moving forward is just the ease of use of incredibly high security, of the highest security standards that we can get. And hardware wallets are becoming way, way better. Some of the new developments in recent ones, there's now two major hardware wallets that I have seen. One of them I've got here with Kobo Vault, which I'm going to do another video on, because the first firmware that I had on this, the keyboard has some, the virtual keyboard on it or whatever, has some really frustrating headaches. But I spoke with the head of the company, and he was like, "Oh shit, you got an old firmware. We actually fixed that problem." So I haven't done that yet either. But it's completely air gapped, and so like everything communicates by QR code and camera, and the ease of integration with those things is really powerful. And being able to integrate this into the reference client, into the Bitcoin Core client, which is, you know, for every obvious reason, very, very minimal. But to have the base client, to have the reference client actually integrate and greatly simplify the hardware wallet experience and the signing experience with hardware wallets is going to continue to push that standard. And as I go forward, like, particularly having multiple hardware wallets now, I don't want to do anything without a hardware wallet. I don't like having a mobile wallet that doesn't have some sort of a, you know, I love that I have mobile wallets now that I can use my hardware wallet for one of the signatures. I've played around with Unchained Capital's Caravan multi-sig. I think multi-sig is an incredibly important standard. I think this is a huge step toward pushing it in that direction. This is the infrastructure. This is the foundation of all of it, and it needs to interact with the best security standards that we have. And that's what I think is happening. And you see a couple of other changes in this implementation in particular, or in this version in particular, that is simplifying and cleaning that up as well, removing the BIP70 payments standard, which some of you may not really know much about that. Greg Maxwell actually has a really good post on Reddit about all of the problems that BIP70 basically puts in into the client itself, like into the actual operation, and vulnerabilities that it enables for the actual user. And one of the things is it takes away the kind of isolated independence of the client. It requires specifically a lot of external third-party code and security critical code that A, both gets exposed to the network, but also B, has to be relied upon. And it was also what was attaching the core client to have to continue using OpenSSL, which again is another external set of code that has to be pulled in, and we want to isolate this thing. Bitcoin Core, like the reference client, the foundation of the network, needs to be its own thing. It does not need to be reaching out and, you know, grabbing code from other places or depending on other unrelated development teams in order to maintain its security. But there were some pretty creepy attacks in the BIP70, and again, it's also a payment protocol. You know, it's a way to exchange other information, but it enabled the ability to really, really kind of sneaky stuff that were hard to get around. Like it increases a lot of the complexity of the actual payment experience, like from a coding perspective, which obviously leads to privacy vulnerabilities and just vulnerabilities in general. It's adding new attack vectors. But it also enabled, like with the ability, like you never want, you don't want the payment to fail. So essentially you renegotiate, this transaction. And then there's always the possibility of either a malicious merchant or, connecting to a malicious host, and you can essentially be tricked into signing either multiple transactions or, signing a transaction where you're not 100% sure about the underlying details of it. Because like, if you wanted to like push back, like if a merchant would say that, we don't want to accept it from a blacklisted address or something, essentially the payment could continue to go back and until multiple versions of it were signed from different addresses on the client side and then sent over to the merchant. And then the merchant says, oh no, let's try this again. Let's try this again. And the user doesn't really know or see what they're actually exposing themselves to. And then finally the payment goes through, but this merchant may have, three previously signed and still valid transactions sitting in their logs, sitting in their records of, oh, these messed up. And then, you know, a hacker could get access to it months later, or maybe the merchant itself is malicious. And, you know, 2 months later, you think everything's good. And then suddenly they broadcast all three of these transactions and your wallet damn near gets emptied. And you're like, what happened? Where did, how did these get taken from me? And then another big thing to point out is that, you know, BitPay was one of the only significant services that actually uses the BIP-70 standard, but they implemented their own version of it. So it's not even compatible. It's not that they modified it and then just kind of waited for other people to adjust to that and for, you know, the security or privacy vulnerabilities to get worked out. And it doesn't really. And then, of course, you know, one of the things that Aaron mentioned in the article is just that it didn't even get adopted. You know, the merchant adoption story of Bitcoin didn't even really work in the long run because it's still going to be volatile for a long time. And the base blockchain isn't a good payment mechanism. It's not a payment system. It's a system of arbitration and final ownership. It is a settlement system for the underlying value. And I think this is also kind of a recognition too that there's so much happening that doesn't have these privacy trade-offs, that doesn't have these huge vulnerabilities on Lightning, and Lightning is becoming more robust and more reliable as a payment system on top of it, that with all that explosion of work and development on the Lightning network, why do we need this unused attack vector in the core client? Just remove it. Just get it out. It's busy. It's too much. It's unnecessary code, and all it does is open users of the base software of a reference client up to vulnerabilities that shouldn't be there in the first place. Now, another really interesting development in this one was which I don't really know anything about this, the network operators group that he talked about and the autonomous systems. And this is something kind of deep into how routing is sorted on network systems and how we distinguish whether or not we're using the same route for something or how we decide where internet routes are. And essentially, there's a lot of different things at play in the Bitcoin Core client to make sure that it is as distributed as possible in its connection sphere, so that if a bunch of, like, let's say somebody spins up a lot of Sybil nodes and they're all on AWS in, you know, one connected through one trunk line on the same route, and it's just, you know, 8 different IP addresses, or, you know, 10,000, let's say they spin up 10,000 and you're connecting to 8, right, by default, that you connect to them, well, your client is automatically going to look and say, these are IP addresses based in the same location, that they are placed in the same region in the network map. They are all behind the same ISP. And then they reach out to these, you know, apparently these clusters of network operators groups to know the key routes that are being used for these things. And that essentially there is a vulnerability that all of those, calling it a vulnerability is a little bit iffy. It's just that they are kind of a single point of failure for knowing where the routes and bottlenecks are. That if you're relying on all of these, the map itself as your, that could be potentially centralized as the mechanism for deciding whether or not you have a broad set of connections, Well, you need a route around that. You need to make sure that you're also not using a lot of these network operators groups or these ASs, these automated systems that apparently share the same map. So you also, not only do you want to make sure your IP addresses are from different regions, not only do you want to make sure that they are from many different ISPs, but you also want to, and aren't using the same routes across the internet, but you also want to make sure that your route, the map of your routes that you have access to, isn't being controlled by a very explicit group that has all the exact same detail. You want to get a broad range of that as well. So that's a really powerful but incredibly subtle thing, that the level of adversarial thinking that is going into this development is incredibly deep. It's just like, where is any central point of failure where we are even, are we even looking at the same internet map? Because if we are, we shouldn't. We should see if we can make sure that every client is reaching out and looking at two different maps, three different maps from three different locations, three different ASNs or however they refer to it. Again, this is a little bit deep for me, but that's just a really fascinating element of adversarial thinking, and the depth of adversarial thinking that they're putting into making this the most reliable cryptographic infrastructure in the world. And then to, at the same time, eliminating reliance on OpenSSL, and finally basically kicking that completely out of the code so that it's, not vulnerable to any third-party software, or at least to as little as potentially possible. It's just a lot of really interesting developments in the concept of independence of the code and the underlying code base of all of this, so that everything from any perspective that we can any angle that we can kind of look at this, it is standalone. And I want to say there's a little bit of a couple other things that I want to talk about with the hardware wallets, and particularly with the partially signed transactions, because one of the most powerful things with that is that is how you start integrating simple means of batching transactions, of batching your own transactions, obviously, and then doing multi-sig from the GUI and having data that you can sign with multiple things, like the ability to have that kind of as the base, the very base client, and then to build on top of that and to already have those tools kind of worked out. I think standardizing the use of hardware wallets and batching transactions on a user side rather than actually, having to depend on a service to batch a transaction, or having to potentially deal with multiple different standards of, how to pull that stuff together. But using a hardware wallet to do that with lightning channels and splicing in and out of channels. Like, there's just a lot of potential there, and this is another great example of being able to use these tools in a far easier way and at a far at the base layer of this entire network infrastructure. But I am so out of time, I got to close this one out. I wish I had more time to talk about it, but I'll try to bring some of this up maybe in tomorrow's episode. I got a really, really fun read for tomorrow. A huge thank you to Bitcoin Magazine. Much love to Swan Bitcoin for supporting this show. Aaron Van Vierdom for writing this piece and always staying on top of this. I mean, he was on it like nobody's business. It's just great to always have these updates and have somebody break all this down and collect all these links just so I can look through all these and read them and stuff. It's just wonderful having everybody on top of this, some amazing stuff happening. I'm really excited about this. So with that, let's go ahead and close this one out. Thank you so much for listening. Do not forget to subscribe. This is Bitcoin Audible, and of course, share it out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin space, so they too can get all the best in Bitcoin delivered straight to their ears. That is what we do here. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.